WGS on KMOX. Happy Tuesday. Pretty day out there. Relative cold front moves in tonight and tomorrow and for the next two or three days after that in the 80s. So enjoy that. I'm sure it's going to heat up again pretty soon. Attorney Brad Young joins us. Hello, Brad.
Hey, Dave.
So sometimes I take heat from the audience if I go off on Trump too much. So I always like to do it around you. I just feel like it gives me some cover and you can push back. But we can talk about the war in Iran, which I completely believe he fell into his own trap. And now I believe he's trapped. And when he says things like he has said, I think it's 50 times now, and he said it again today, Iran is desperate. They're desperate for a meeting. Dude, we have eyes. They are not desperate. They're not desperate for a meeting or you would be having them. But I think he's a pathological liar. And I've never said that before, and I don't mean that, like, hyperbolically. I'm not a psychiatrist. I don't know the very definitions of it. But the fact that he lies about things that he doesn't need to tell me that it's just a way of life for him. And I have two examples. One would be the reflecting pool. There was no need to ever lie and say that there was a 300-yard gash in it and to arrest Americans and indict them in federal court for being the vandals that ruined it. Things go wrong. People have swimming pools and it gets algae and it gets too much chlorine. It's not the end of the world, Mr. President. At least I would not have gone off on you if you tried your best to redo it and make it better, but it had some problems. But the lying part is just ridiculous. And then the most recent one is the new Air Force One from Qatar. And the fact that he told that lame ass lie about, oh, yeah, I'm just going to take the old busted one back because there are some dog faces that want to see it. Like, no, we knew that wasn't true. And then it came out that it had not really been retrofitted the way it should be. And then they subpoenaed the New York Times journalist's phones to find out who leaked it. And then he came out again today and he's like, well, no, it's completely up to snuff. It has everything it needs. And then they put out this stupid Truth Social. Did you see it? It's a picture of him on the stairs of the plane and it says plane maxing. Oh, exhausting. Okay. But do you feel
where do I start? Okay, I've got a list of stuff here. Shoot. And I'm gonna go through it in order. First of all, with regard to whether Iran wants to negotiate, here's the actual no spin. This is really what's happening here. There is a split in Iran. Wall Street Journal has been covering this, where the diplomatic corps is telling the White House, we would like to talk about a resolution. But the IRGC, the Islamic Revolution Guard Corps, because there's an absence of leadership in Iran, the leader was killed. The new leader, we've never seen him. He might be dead. We don't know. He might be legless. We don't know. He certainly hasn't appeared on camera or in any recording. So we don't know his status. And in that vacuum of leadership in Iran, you've got the IRGC continuing to fire missiles while at the same time, the Iranian diplomatic corps is telling the Pakistanis and us that they want to talk. So to some extent, I'm not trying to say Trump's not a liar, because the whole issue about the reflecting pool is just preposterous. So I'm not saying he doesn't exaggerate, he doesn't lie. He does. Everybody knows that. But with regard to Iran, I think that there are mixed signals coming. You and I, before I was on vacation last week, you and I talked about how the core Iranian people, meaning the IRGC, they don't want a deal. They never want a deal. But I think there are elements, according to the Wall Street Journal, of the diplomatic corps that do. Now, let's talk about the plane for a second, and then we can circle back. The plane, as you know from my discussion with you a long time ago about the Shahid 136, this is an area of interest of mine. And the plane, the interior of the Qatari plane that was donated, the interior is completely finished. What is not finished is that there is an entire suite of defensive measures like flares, like anti-missile missiles that are currently installed on the older versions of Air Force One. They were not installed in the red, white, and blue plane painted in Trump's favorite manner, those are not embedded on the new Qatari plane. So when he talks about them, it's finished, but it needs to be maxed out. I'm interpreting his hyperbole to say that the interior, you know, looks like gold, glommy, like he loves it, but the exterior in terms of defensive measures is incomplete.
This is why I do it around you. You can always give, like, the, you know, the counterpoint to it.
Have we all, I don't know the legality of it, Brad. Have we gotten past any, I don't know, conflict of interests or concerns about gifts from foreign governments? No. I mean, like, or is it just, are we just pretending it doesn't exist?
Well, it doesn't really exist until he's out of office.
Okay.
Let's look at the Nixons, okay? When we had the Nixon's daughter, I think it was Patricia, I forgot her first name. Anyway, there was a wedding in the White House in the early 1970s. I mean, I was watching Scooby-Doo eating Oreos, so I wasn't covering it, you know, very closely. But if you look back in history, all of the wedding gifts that she received, she couldn't keep them. They all had to go in, like, next to the Ark of the Covenant in some warehouse in Arizona, and she didn't get to keep them. So when I look at this plane, right now it's being used by the president, not a problem, not a conflict of interest. But the day he retires, if it's used for any personal usage, then at that point it does become a conflict of interest. It does become what's called a private inurement, and it is a problem. Now, here's what I don't know, because it's never been done. I don't know how you enforce that. Okay, every president has recognized I can't stick these gifts in my pocket, or in this case, in my own personal plane hanger, and take them away. So I don't know how that can be enforced. All I can tell you is that the day he's out of office, if he uses that plane for personal purposes, that becomes a private inurement, which is prohibited by the Constitution. Huh.
What about if it becomes a part of his library?
Well, if it's parked in his library, I don't see a problem with that. But who's going to take essentially a brand new plane and park it as an exhibit? If he wants to fly in it, I think that's a problem. If he wants to park it at the library, like right now, there's a plane parked at other presidential libraries to say this is what President Johnson flew when he was president. That's not a problem. But if he uses the plane, that becomes a problem.
Gotcha. Brad always sends us some interesting stories over. Supreme Court takes up Alaska bush pilot's fight to save his plane from forfeiture over a six-pack of beer.
Yeah, this is real. You know, that sounds like a headline, like the Weekly World News headline, right? The only thing missing is an alien or maybe Elvis. But no, this is real, because there was this bush pilot. He was flying a plane. We've all seen those planes that can land on the water, right? They got one engine. Indiana Jones was in one in the first movie. We know what they look like. So his plane's worth almost $100,000. He was flying somebody in, and there was a six-pack of beer that he couldn't even see. He lands. He gets convicted of a misdemeanor. But under the Alaskan forfeiture statute, if you use equipment, including a plane, in the commission of a crime, you can be forced to forfeit the property. And so now he was adjudicated in Alaska. They said, you got to give up your $100,000 plane because you had a six pack of beer and it was being flown into a dry county. And so he appealed it under the Eighth Amendment. It says,
yeah,
exactly, under the Eighth Amendment, it says you can't have any fine or punishment that's deemed excessive. And so that's what he's taken to the Supreme Court, and they agreed to take it.
So I don't know anything about Alaska law, but I lived there for 3 years. That sounds like one of the most non-Alaskan things ever.
Oh, it does. It does, because, you know, listen, Alaska is in fact, I got a relative that lives there, and she's single. And I asked her one time why she didn't get married, because there's lots of men there. And she said, well, in Alaska, we have a saying, the odds are good, but the goods are odd.
I like that.
But they go for anything up there. But because he was convicted, the court said you got to sacrifice your plane. He rightly appealed that. And the fact that the Supreme Court's going to take it, look, this is an easy case. This should be 8-1, 9-0, saying that this is excessive fine, and they're going to remand it back. But I just think it's funny because of the headline.
Yeah. U.S. Appeals Court strikes down New Jersey's assault weapons ban on AR-15s.
Well, I think this is interesting because the Supreme Court's already said we're going to take this case up in the next term about whether under Illinois and Connecticut law, they both ban AR-15s. Those are now being combined or up at the Supreme Court next term. And so in this particular New Jersey case, where the Federal Court of Appeals pretty much, I think, render the decision based on what they think the Supremes are going to do next term, which is state that AR-15 has a useful purpose. It falls in line with the historical purposes of guns under the Second Amendment, and therefore it violates any bans of AR-15s violate the Second Amendment. So I just think it's interesting here that a court of appeals would make a decision based on what they think the Supreme Court's going to do, and you don't see that very often.
Brad, probably an unfair question to ask you, but where is the current line? Like, you can have an AR-15, you can't have a bazooka. Like, what's on the bubble?
Well, the Supreme Court said in Heller, going back to 2011, that you can, and in fact, Scalia wrote that opinion. He said you can place regulations on guns. They're not above regulation, but it has to fit within the historical purpose of guns. So I think where the line is it used for what guns have historically been used for, which is hunting, self-defense, and sport. If it falls into that category, it's going to be protected by the Second Amendment. So as you said, if you got a bazooka, that doesn't fall in line with any of those three.
Yeah.
And so I think that's, and of course I'm simplifying a 100-page decision in Heller into four sentences. But when you condense it down, I think that's the line.
It's a fascinating thing because it seems just a matter of who's making the definition, right? I mean, could I not argue that a fully automatic weapon is for my self-defense, just like a semi?
Yes, you could. And I think that's really where the court, because I don't see the court ever stating fully automatic weapons are going to be allowed and why. If you look back historically, Wheels, people have never legally owned fully automatic weapons. Even if you go back into the Bonnie and Clyde days, right? And we see those, and I've actually fired one of these, those old Tommy guns.
Yeah.
With the four, I mean, oh man, you talk about a thrill. That thing's great to shoot. But even then they were illegal, and they're illegal now unless you have a collector's license. And they've always been illegal since automatic weapons first came onto the scene. So I think you could make the argument that doesn't fit in with the historical tradition. But your greater point is, how do we determine what is the historical tradition? And that certainly is in the eye of the beholder.
Brad, you like this story. I also got to shoot a Tommy gun when I was studying for the FBI Citizens Academy, and they took us out to the firing range, and I got to shoot a sniper rifle.
Ooh.
And one of the FBI agents who was a fan of the show, great guy, he put a picture of his face up as the target, and I shot him right through the eye, and he said, you got to keep this. This is your souvenir. And about 3 days later, I had that in my old man bag, sort of an old leather pouch, and I was flying to Chicago, and it was in there.
Oh, no.
And they didn't pull it out, but I'm like, what am I going to say? Like, hey, this looks like you have a picture of a human with a bullet hole through his eye. Like, it's fine. He's an FBI agent. They're like, okay.
Oh, yeah. That makes it okay, right?
You can just come with us, sir. Put your hands behind your back.
Well, thankfully, that didn't show up on the X-ray screening when it went through, or else, you would have had a hard time explaining that away.
All right, buddy. Thank you. We appreciate it.
My pleasure, guys.
Welcome back, DGS. So, Rach, how have hobbies gone too far?
Yeah, I saw this opinion piece in Time basically talking about, you know, this is only some people, but they stack up so many hobbies that they have no free time at all.
Mm-hmm.
And vacations are spent just like hiking and working on their various hobbies. Sorry, hiking is the only one that's like popping into my mind right now. But if you're like super into woodworking and you're doing that for 9 hours a day on your vacation, and it's leading to adults becoming really burnt out from their hobbies or getting physically injured from pushing themselves too hard from their hobbies. And, you know, I'm sure that's only some people, but it got me to thinking, like, I wonder how many of these people who are getting like too into it and almost feel like they have something to prove with it. I wonder how much of that is born out of like social media and the need to post it and the need to prove you're doing something rather than just doing it like for yourself and for fun.
Great question. How would life be different? Not like secrecy, keeping secrets and stuff. I'm just saying, how would life be different if we didn't report on everything we did? If we just did stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I think some people's lives would be about the same. I think others, their lives would be a lot different. So it's just interesting to think about people's various motivations for doing things. Because, you know, hobbies are good. Like, the piece wasn't trying to say, like, don't have a hobby, don't ever do anything. But it was maybe making the point of sometimes we put too much pressure on ourselves with these things.
If we all went to Florida on vacation together, who's laying on the beach with me all day and who's out on the ocean on a Sea-Doo?
I feel like Wheels is on the Sea-Doo.
Sea-Doo, let's go.
If there's a Sea-Doo, I'm on it.
Yeah.
I'll be on the beach.
All right.
That whole thing about like hurting yourself during your hobbies, that stung, man.